You're going down, sucker.
Possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It is finally the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your Dallas Mavericks and the NBA. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. With me, as always, is the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter, the man who makes this thing go, the brains of this operation, Mr. Brian Gutierrez. You may know him as Ballin' with Brian. Belligerent ball fan Timothy A. Koger is not with us today. He should be back by the time we roll through here again for the start of the season. So until then, the show will just be 10 to 15% less belligerent than normal. And we will just move on without him.
Fellas.
Yeah. See?
Fella.
Fill the role. We're
there
good.
There we go.
Episode
62.
62, Mavericks Outsider Report. Like I said, I'm Rylan. He's Brian. Here we are. We're doing it. We're talking Mavs. It's that time.
It's October 9th.
It's October 9th.
We have not had a show since August 2nd.
That is the longest gap we've ever had.
That's a hiatus.
That is a hiatus.
I would say that's a hiatus.
That is a hiatus. However, there was no basketball.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, what are you going to do?
I ain't going to talk about baseball for 2 hours. Y'all could talk about it.
We could have then. We could have now.
That would have been the Rangers Outsider Report.
We're going to hang tight on that, at least until Tim's back. But yeah, so here we
are.
Are
the Rangers still playing?
Have you heard?
No.
Yeah, so not so much.
Uh-oh.
My entire calendar just opened up. I went from basically not having any commitment for anything in October since the beginning of the year. Anybody wants to do anything in October, can't do it. We moved I just started a new job. Need to go to London for this new job. We pushed pushed that into November.
Oh.
Had a kid. Need to get her baptized. Pushed that into November.
How's baby Dirk doing?
Baby Dirkette is doing just fine.
Okay.
What else did I push into November or move into September?
White Cloth John?
You name it.
Be gone till November?
Yeah, we're gone. I was expecting to be gone till November, but obviously I'm not now. So that's why now it's October 9th and we're talking about
Basketball,
because it's Rangers therapy, and it's that time, and the Mavericks have started their preseason schedule, and it's time for us to break down just a little bit. Like you said, we haven't talked since really the point in early August at which the roster had become set, and we knew who we were going to go to battle with, but that's about all we knew. We know more now. We've had media day. We've had two preseason games now as of a few hours ago, the exhibition games in Europe. We've had some time for some things to digest, some things to hit the news and go away again, so we get to break them all down.
We're going to do the breaking down of the preseason games with Mark Follibal, big friend of the show, hopefully at the top of the hour. We're very flexible.
What just happened?
Yeah, yeah. He's getting
swole, so
man,
we got to wait and figure out how his schedule is going to work with ours.
But if he has to do another 20,000 crunches.
Luckily, we have a staff of producers that of you who watch the video stream,
you can't see over here.
You don't see them over there. There's like a long table, like a newsroom, and there's just chairs, and they're tracking Mark right now via the Google machine, and they'll be making sure that he aligns with us, and we'll have him on for a nice meaty segment as we always do.
So we'll do that later in the show, but we're gonna go ahead and there's a little game that I want to play with Rylan a little bit later. He doesn't really know what's going to go on there, but that's usually the best way.
I'm going into this like I said before the show,
balls out,
and especially when we don't get to talk to each other a whole lot, like we haven't.
Right.
We don't really sit here and shoot the breeze much before the show because you just save it all for the show.
Right.
But I did tell you, I'm floating. Like, okay, I saw 6 or 7 minutes of game action on that first preseason game.
Do you remember who they played?
I went to the Jessica Alba.
Alba Berlin. Close.
Okay, whatever. I went to the media day.
Yeah.
We're not the
press,
not
introductory presser.
Not the media day, but the season ticket holder media thing.
And we're going to have to talk about that.
And that's worth covering. But, you know, besides that, I was like,
baseball.
My world centered around baseball and baby thinking that I was going to be, you know, baseballing right up until the regular season. So, I mean, you're carrying, basically what I'm trying to say here, folks, you're carrying me today.
Okay, so let's get started with Media Day, with a project.
Media.
With a project I wanted to work on, which was a one-on-one with Dirk. And I went through the process of talking to Sarah Melton and Scott Tomlin, who are the PR wizards for the Mavericks, and then Allen as well. But he likes to stay in the background.
I was going to say, I've never heard that name.
He likes to stay in the background. He's low-key. But that's how he likes it to be. So I talked with Scott and Sarah to set up the interview. And what it was is Media Day is a day where you get to look at everyone, shiny new toys, take pictures of them, and then they talk to the media. But mainly it was... No, not so much. We knew who he was, and D.A. wasn't. He took a picture.
J.J. Barrera.
He's actually off the team now, Daryl.
He's just talk a bit.
He retired. You might need to get an updated roster, sir.
So, Dirk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dirk was there.
You get to go and, you know, there's availability. You can talk to the players, ask them questions. They're getting all their little, you know, shots up against the white background that they use throughout all the promotional materials for the season. And you're always like, man, they look so fresh and
they're happy.
And that's because it was all done in early October or late September when everybody's coming back from summer. And it's the first day of school.
Pretty much.
It's pretty much. Now, okay, refresh my memory. Was the thing that I went to, was that the day before or the afternoon before Media Day? Was that was
a couple of days before Media Day.
Right. It was like on it was a cute couple of days before. It wasn't like the same day or the day
no,
after.
No,
okay,
no,
that's
no,
what
no,
I thought.
No. So what they do is a Media Day, they take those pictures and then they do basically what I say is a car wash. They go from station to station to do interviews with Fox Sports Southwest, all the local networks to do everything like that. And that's just based on how, for lack of a better term, popular you are. If you're going to be very popular, you're going to hit all of them. I'm guessing Dominique Jones did not hit a lot of these. That too. But Dirk was obviously a guy that's going to hit all of them, basically.
Yeah.
And what happened was when I talked to Scott, he's like, yeah, we'll still do it, but unfortunately we got to do it from station to station to station. So what we're doing is walking around the lower level of the American Airlines Center. And as he's going from station to station, we're talking. And he's like, oh, you're going to be with me all afternoon? I was like, pretty much.
So you're pretty much his sidekick for the day. Which actually, honestly, that's cooler than just sitting down and having 20 minutes of one-on-one with him. Because you get to kind of just, you know, be a fly on the wall. And the little birdie on his shoulder while he goes through everything else. And then get his little quips and asides in between.
And that's literally what it was. It was 20 minutes of actual talking, but it's sprawled across 2.5 hours.
Right, you got to see the whole
thing. To see everything, and they have to do some wacky, dumb stuff for promotions.
They have to do, you know, DJ Benga saying tacos and all that kind of
Taco
stuff.
Taco time.
So this is your third Media Day, or did you go to the Media Day 2 years ago or no?
Yes.
So this there is your third one?
Yes, it was. I forgot about last year because that was just a drop of a hat.
Just,
we got to do it real quick.
Jacked up like the whole season.
So this was. So this was my third Media Day, so I was kind of used to it, but this was a new aspect of getting to see what he does. So what it was seeing all these stupid videos that he had to do and get to learn the Dukes of Hazzard on the fly, because he had no idea about the Dukes of Hazzard. And
that alone is worth just having on YouTube.
I wish I could have.
Whoever was explaining Dukes of Hazzard to Dirk.
Cash Roy was doing that a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure that was funny. But you'd have to kind of break it down. So, okay, so people used to run moonshine, and then there's rednecks. And you know rednecks because you've lived in Texas for all this time. But
Cayman chimed in for the redneck
part. Cayman could be like his tour guide for the Dukes.
Dude, so,
1983. I was Duke's P1, big time.
So I figured what we could do during this part of the show is sort of go over the questions that I talked to with, or I asked Dirk, and we could sort of reflect on what he said. So the first question I asked was talking about the overall tempo of the team with Elton Brand and Chris Kamen in the mix, and there's been some confusion on if the team will slow down or if it will actually speed up. So this is what he had to say. Oh, something popped up. There we go.
Well, I think the tempo is not going to change much when the other team miss. They both can run. I know Kamen actually can run a lot faster than people think. So I think if we miss, it's still going to go. And Darren is very quick. The trick still loves to run on the break and is one of the fastest guys in the three spot. So if the other teams miss, we're still going to push up and play fast. And then we can always pull back and kind of run some sets when the other teams score. Then we can slow down some. And then if they're posted or isolated somewhere on the side, then I can spot up. Obviously, the other teams are going to respect my three-point shot, so that should give them more room to operate either from 15 foot from the logo or on the block. And, yeah, we should have some nice matchups out there.
We'll do the 20-second on this one.
So you can see right there that was Scott chiming and saying 20-second on this one because he's got to do his next thing. And kind of one of the things you'll notice with Dirk's answers is he's very thorough and thoughtful with his answers. So that's kind of
because
nice...
he has mad respect for the mild-mannered reporter.
No, it's definitely not that.
No, he does.
No.
He absolutely does.
No.
He's like, honored to be in the presence.
He's like, oh, you again.
He's like, this guy.
Yeah. He's kind of... He goes along the lines of saying... The team has to play defense for the tempo to really work out optimally for the team. And something we've seen over the course of the first two games is that Kamen does have good agility. He even kind of poked fun at him a little bit, saying faster than most people think.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting.
Look at the guy.
Yeah. He's kind of goofy. We'll just say he's goofy.
But he is a world-class athlete.
Yes.
So.
Given that. The next question I asked after the next station was, and it's going to be actually more relevant now based on the news of today with Dirk sitting out the game due to some swelling in his knee. What I asked him was, how has his preparation changed from his rookie year to now? So, and there's obviously been 13, 14 years in the process, so he's learned a couple things.
I'm so old.
So this is what he had to say.
Well, I lift a lot more weights now. I never really believed in lifting weights. So over the years now you learn you have to keep your legs strong to take the pressure off the joints. And like I said, usually you don't do anything for like a month. When you were young in your 20s, it takes like 2 weeks and you're back to the level. And when you're older, it just takes a long, long time to get ready. And I learned that from a lockout season. So this year I maintained a certain fitness level and felt good.
Feels good, but he's got some swelling to deal with.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's cover the knee right now since that's kind of topical to this question you asked him, and it's the opening segment, and this did hit today that he did sit out this game against whoever.
FC Barcelona. Barcelona?
FC?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought FC was meant for soccer.
I haven't really paid
I think they just, over there, they just put FC in front of everything.
Future club
they
Barcelona.
Just say like FC I'm gonna go to FC McDonald's and get an FC hamburger. It's ridiculous. Let's get a but we got to put the adjective after the noun. That's all we care about.
Yes.
But anyway, he sat the game out. A little bit of knee soreness. You're seeing different things come across on Twitter from different people in the world of opinion. Not something I want to see, obviously, given what happened last year. I guess we're just going to have to touch and go, man. I hope it doesn't linger. I hope that it's just a matter of them being more, I guess. I hope it's just that they are more cognizant of this process with Dirk and figure them out as well. Just kind of keep everyone in the loop on it, whereas maybe in the past, you know, we didn't hear about it as much or whatever. I don't know, but it doesn't give me the warm fuzzy, that's for sure. One of our stream listeners posed a good question, though.
What's that?
Is this sore right knee the same knee that Dirk sprained all the way back in 2010 against OKC?
Oh, good. I think that was his left knee. I'm not 100% sure, but I'd have to dig that up.
We should definitely check
that. That's a good question. Yeah. And that was a real fluky injury that he had.
Where
he didn't
came
land.
Down kind of funny.
He didn't land on anyone. It just...
Yeah, put that on your notepad.
I am going to look that up.
Yeah. So, okay. Interesting question, but what are you, I mean...
It's a problem now probably with age.
I'm not going to worry... I'll tell you what I'll say. I'm not going to worry about getting worried right now, but I'm going to be prepared to be worried if I'm still talking about it in 2 or 3 weeks. How about that?
I agree with that. I think the knee is going to be just the new thing he has to deal with. In previous years, it's been the ankles, but now he's getting older, so the knees and the joints and everything, ligaments, if you will, are going to be an issue. But we'll just have to see how it goes. The next question was, which is also interesting in its relevance now is asking him about Roddy and what happens, what needs to happen with Roddy for him to take the next step.
Well, he needs to stay injury free. I think that's very important. For him to feel good about his body, about the work he can put in, and I think he worked hard all summer. Just learn, get better, be a more consistent shooter, make better decisions on the fly. Oh, no. But we all want him to keep being aggressive. I think he's best when he attacks, when he gets in the lane, when he makes decisions. But you just got to get better. I mean, he's young, and that's what developing is all about. You put hard work in the off season. He was able to do that, and hopefully he'll have a great year. And I'll help him wherever I can. Set screens and get him open. We want him to attack. We want him to shoot when he's open. So we'll see. We'll see how it works.
In other words, get better at everything.
Yes,
because you haven't gotten better at anything yet, and we need you to get better at everything. To which Roddy responded by turning an ankle.
He did, and that was kind of unfortunate. The reason he said "oh no" during that was because he saw Mark Stein. Mm-hmm. He looked up. We were walking to the next station, and he sees Mark Stein.
Most people say "oh no" when they see Mark Stein.
Yeah. Sorry, I was trying to do research at the same time. So let's go to the next question. I was asking about OJ Mayo, and we've heard a lot of comments from Mayo leading up to the preseason of how he wants to work with Dirk and everything like that. So here's what Dirk had to say about Mayo.
We actually practiced a couple times already. He had us shot together a little bit this week, but I only just got back, like I said, a couple of days ago. Looking forward to a great year with him. Playing off each other. He's going to spread the floor for me. I'm going to spread the floor for him when he does his thing, and hopefully play off each other well, like me and Jet did. Looking forward to really having a good year together. So. We'll see how it works.
Is it kind of different where you're being in your 15th year and you still got these guys at 4 years that are like, I got to see Dirk?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was obviously still younger and show these guys how we used to work out when we were young. I mean, now obviously I don't do that as much on the court anymore. I don't take 1,000 jumpers a day anymore. But back in the days, we definitely used to put in the work. So, but hopefully I can still give them some good pointers. And point him in the right direction, and play off each other and show him where he can be successful for us, and it's going to be great.
Anything to take away from that one?
Hey, I think that's something that we're going to have to watch and see what the product on the court ultimately looks like. I think Mayo is one of the X factors going into this season. We talked about it a little bit when we last convened here. I think that Dirk makes a good point about trying to find ways to play off of him like he used to with Jet. Of course, he said that about Roddy, too. But I think with Mayo, it's a much more realistic expectation. That's kind of the role that he should be able to provide in some ways, although he's not the exact same player. I don't know if I want to say I have high hopes for Mayo, but I have hopes that that he can be the second scoring option here, given time and given what we know Rick Carlisle can do. X's and O's wise offensively, he's really good at getting guys in good spots to outdo their previous best. So maybe that'll happen here, and if it does, it'll definitely, I think, make the Mavs a lot more interesting team in terms of making noise in the playoffs, because Mayo's got talent that eclipses what his resume says at this point.
Right. The next question was kind of something I thought of off of a nugget that we'll actually use today, and that was George Karl talking about how the NBA basically needs to steer clear of the NFL in terms of scheduling and work like a 50 to 62 game schedule in their season now.
Oh, yeah. I remember we talked about that randomly one day. Right. I thought a long time ago we were talking about moving the baseball season and moving basketball and right. Everything else. Yeah, I don't know. I love the early part of the season, though.
A lot of people, we're hardcore fans though. So,
but the people that don't, nobody's making them watch.
Yeah, that's true.
But then again, if these owners are losing money like they say they are, maybe that's one of the things you need to look at.
But I thought Dirk's answer on this was interesting, and I asked him what would he think about a shortened season where it's stretched out but still a shortened season, not compared to last year with the lockout.
Too many games. Yeah, I mean, if they cut it down to 50 games, we still have a decent season in a normal, longer environment, not in 2 months. But I always said we have way too many games, and then still have 8 teams in the playoffs is way too much. And then I think 5 games in the first round was way enough. You don't need to make the first round 7 games.
Agreed.
Way too many games.
That's the point, Dirk. I agree, Dirk, 100% on that. I don't know about the whole thing with seasons. I don't like significant changes to season length because I'm a stat nerd and I like to see that all the stats kind of hold and play in the same, kind of play in the same universe and everything like that. But there was no need to extend that 5-game first round series to 7 games in 2003, and they did it mid-season. It was done hastily. And I don't like it. I still don't like it 9-10 years later, and they need to undo it because I said so.
Let me ask you as a season ticket holder.
Especially since that first round takes 2 weeks to play.
Yeah, they stretch it out for TV even more.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So that would be something good, too, to look at. As a season ticket holder.
Yes, that would be me.
Let's say that they shrunk it down to 62 games, just for a nice number. So that's 31 home games. That's going to be less, obviously, games to go to, but they inflate the price to make it 41. Would you still partake?
Probably, but I'm kind of I'm a little bit of an outlier, I think, because that's how I ended up coming up with the I Do Sports, is because during the playoffs in 2011, we had playoffs, we had Rangers season tickets, and that all stretched out through mid-June. And so it was like all we did was sports. And now it's just kind of part of our recreational set-aside for us, you know, going to Rangers games, going to Mavericks games, doing whatever. So I definitely would. Also because I've stayed in the cheaper, even though I bought these season tickets when I had an $800 credit limit on my credit card and had to have the credit card credit limit bumped up to even pay for the damn things, even though they barely cost more than $800 when I was a kid, when I was 22 years old. Now, 10 years later, I've never upgraded.
Right.
I mean, I'm just reaping because it's a good value for $18 a seat or whatever it is, you know? So from that standpoint, and there we go.
Yeah.
so from that...
One of our producers is down.
So from that standpoint, you know, I think that... I'm kind of weird because I haven't spent a lot of money. So for me to say, oh, it's going to go up 25%, you know, well, that's just a couple hundred bucks. But if it's somebody who's spending $5,000 on lower bowl seats split with 4 other people at their company and they're each getting 10 games, now all of a sudden, oh, I'm only getting,
six
games and I'm still paying $5,000. Then it's like, well,
That's one less collared shirt.
Then that's like $200 a ticket or whatever for them. Whereas for me, it's whatever. It's much, much lower stakes.
Let's do two more. One of them is going to be the one at the end, which is good. Let's talk about Dirk's opinion of the super teams. So this should be an interesting take.
Well, I guess it's interesting for the fans to have those teams battle it out. I mean, the big market teams is where the big fans are. And so it is what it is. I mean, I guess that's why we had the lockout to go against that. It's still a talent pool for all the top teams. So it is what it is, and I'll make it work.
Was the lockout even worth it?
I guess not. All they wanted was a little more of the BRI, I guess, looking back at it now.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I like the way Dirk looks at things, you know, because he is his own man. He's not afraid to say, yeah, this clearly they got what they wanted and it wasn't that drastic to begin with.
Right.
You know, they being the Players Association, you know, so. And he says it is they and not we, which I think he's made several comments going back to last year where he referred to it as they and not we. I don't know if he really feels altogether too connected with that effort. You know, I mean, he's He's set up.
He's not hurting.
He's Dirk, man. He doesn't care about all this other stuff. He just wants to play basketball. That's why he's been who he's been for so long.
So this last part is the hodgepodge asking of questions that I just let it go continuously. So let's just let it fly.
I know you're not big on individual goals and stuff like that, but this year you can pass some pretty big names on the scoring list. Guys like Iverson, Ewing, Jerry West. Does that hold any
Patrick
kind
Chewing.
Of significance right now?
Yeah, not that much right now. I think I always say that in 10 years when I look back at my career, that's going to be sweet. I think that's going to be special. I mean, Jerry West is the freaking logo, man. That'll be unbelievable. But as of now, you know, just keep chasing the dream and just keep playing, keep competing, and everything else comes afterwards, I think.
And you've talked about how you'll reassess things in 2 years when the contract is up. What's going to be the determining factor other than if you can still play at any level are you going to play, or does it have to be a specific level?
Well, you know, I don't want to be that guy that tries too long to keep a good thing going, but as long as I can halfway still move, and I mean, my shot will never go anywhere until I'm 40, but I still got to be able to move and do some other things just besides just stand there and shoot. So I still want to be able to do some other stuff and play a decent all-around game. And if I can't do that anymore and it's not fun anymore, I might as well hang it up.
What are, in 15 years, you're obviously a developed player, but you still like to add things or change things. What are you trying to change or develop this year?
Well, I'm trying to bring the hook shot back a little more. I think it's obviously a very tough shot, but it's a great weapon to have. But I mean, honestly, I've been trying to shoot that for years, and in practice it actually looks decent, it feels decent, but in the games when you're under duress, I never really had the confidence in it to break it out. So, you know, worked on it a bunch again the last 4 or 5 weeks with Holger, and hopefully this year I can break it out a little bit more.
It's just a confidence thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the middle of the game and you're just pushing, somebody's pushing on you, a double team is looking down, you shoot a shot that you're comfortable with. So that's why I ended up shooting maybe more like a one foot lean away more than the hook shot, even though the hook shot is pretty good.
And you came to America, came to Dallas in 98, and then we're obviously in 2012 right now, so it's been a long time. So what impact has the city of Dallas and the fan base had on you?
Well, they watched me grow up. I mean, I came here, I was a kid, and they took me in as one of theirs. I mean, even in the beginning when I was struggling, I remember coming in games where I was starting at the beginning, and then Nelna yanked me because I wasn't playing well, and then I'd come off the bench once in a while, and people still give me a standing ovation and were happy for me. So they watched me grow up. They were by my side this whole way, and that's why this whole championship thing was even sweeter, because the whole community was part of me growing up.
It looks like you have a good idea of where you are in your career. You're talking about different stages. How would you define this stage of your career right now?
Well, you know, it's definitely going towards the end. I don't think that's a secret, but hopefully I can still play on a high level for the next couple of years. And it's been a fun ride. So we see what else is left, what other memories we can make over the next couple of years. And but it's definitely one of the later stages of my career. I don't think that's a secret, and we'll see how far we can go. I was watching Harry Potter 2 last night.
You should have asked him some Harry Potter questions.
They're getting old, bro.
The thing that always sticks out to me, I think that the Dirk is adding a jump hook. I think that's he and Holger's, like, inside joke. I think that about this time every year, Holger texts him and says, "Hey, man, did you tell him we worked on the hook?" And Dirk writes back, "Ha ha, yeah, dude, they took it hook, line, and sinker." Just because every year we talk about it, you know, and every year we're like, oh, you know, Dirk's been throwing in the jump hook, you know, and then it, you know, you see it a couple times in the game, and he puts it away, but he can afford to put it away because he's, you know, gets open so much on those
one foot lean away.
Yeah, the lean away, not the fade away, as he put it there. So,
Scooter, can I get a breath thing?
That's a cutaway I took out.
A breath thing?
He needed a lozenge.
Well, at least he's being courteous of people around him. So, well, that's cool, man. You got to kind of hang with Dirk and pick his brain a little bit on stuff. Same old Dirk, and that's always a good thing.
It is. Very same courteous old guy. Very fun project to work on.
The Mavs fans out there can see that this is a security blanket to you. That the good old Dirk being good old Dirk is a nice little security blanket you can wrap yourself around. It's been a rough off season.
Yes.
It's been emotionally taxing.
It's been a rough week for people.
It's been a rough week in sports for people.
I've been fine.
Texas lost.
I don't know what's going on.
I don't really
on.
Care, but a lot of people do. Texas lost. Rangers got bounced.
Did A&M win?
TCU's QB got DUI'd. Yeah. A&M barely won. Obama got trounced. I mean, it's been a rough week for a lot of people. So
Dirk brings it back.
Dirk brings it all back. Dirk is your Snuggie. Dirk is your basketball Snuggie. Put it on. Get into the chair. Turn the light off. Put it on Fox Sports Southwest and get ready for some basketball because it's coming your way. So there's some other preliminary stuff before we start to carry forward. I know that you have media day wise and also press introduction. What do we call that thing?
I would say it was an introductory press conference.
Introductory press conference. That's what we call
it.
Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting was the questions by the fans.
So let me reset for folks who maybe aren't familiar with this. They've happened a few times over the years.
This was my first one to see.
Since I've been a season ticket holder, I feel like there was one that I missed somewhere along the way, but the one that I did go to was in 2004, which tellingly Nelly did not attend because he was mad about the roster. I attended one in mid-September of 2004. Basically, Cuban and Donnie have made a point for season ticket holders, whenever there's significant roster turnover, to invite season ticket holders to an event where they can sort of sit ringside, if you will, to the introductory press conference that the players have with all of the Dallas media. And then when that's wrapped up, the fans get to ask questions. Now, in 2004, the media portion of the press conference was held downstairs in the normal media little room, you mm-hmm. know, one of the conference room
press
things
conference
or whatever.
Yeah.
And we all sat there on the floor of the AAC and watched it on the big board. Then everybody came in and sat down at their little podium, and then Mark and Bob Ortegal walked around with wireless mics and had people raise their hands and ask questions, and you didn't see the media in the same room, nor were they present for the fan portion. So this year, they were all together. And as we saw, this created some interesting... Now, it was cool for me because I got to go say hi to all you guys that I know, mm-hmm. but...
Did you say hi to anyone you didn't know?
No, but I should have. I should have just been like, hey, man, how's it going? Long summer,
done
huh?
that to Tim.
Yeah.
Tim McMahon.
Long summer, huh? So,
Tim McMahon. So,
hey, man.
ESPNDallas.com.
Yeah. So, I still need to find out where he's from because I'm sure wherever he's from, it's a bigger town than I'm from. While I just saw it as an opportunity to be like, hey, man, hey, Brian, how's it going? What's up? You know, and all this. And everybody else, you know, it's their chance to throw their little zinger in because they know that, different people down there can hear them. You know, these are the guys that I've been trying to get through and their call screener won't let me in. And now I've got, and plus, look, when fans ask questions, they can be all over the map. And some are okay and some are iffy and so-so, but I don't prejudge because those are the customers. I'm a customer, so I take a customer-centric viewpoint of this entire business. You guys will hear me say it throughout the season. I'll say things that kind of, you know, represent that point of view. But somebody wants to ask a question that I think is kind of a dumb question to ask. It's because I'm in it every day and I really follow closely. Not everybody else does, you know. It might be more questions like that my dad or somebody would ask who is a fan of the team but, you know, doesn't know the CBA in and out or doesn't know, you know, whatever. So there was an interesting dynamic there, a lot of questions that created some funny moments, and I hope that Brian has some audio on some of them.
Yes. This one wasn't really a question. It was just more of a let you know kind of thing. So, but you'll know what I'm talking about.
I think I already know which one it is.
I'd like to represent a fairly significant group here. We used to call ourselves the Reunion Rowdies. And yes, I am looking at you, Mark. You used to be one. And there's a couple of things I wanted the new players to know. We have a lot of passion for beating the Lakers, closely followed by the hated Spurs, and I don't think we have to tell you about the Heat. So if anyone would like to respond to that, we do have a lot of passion. There's a lot of rowdies here, and we're still here.
They didn't get a lot of comments out of that. It was mainly Mark just talking.
Well, and good for him, you know, whatever. I'm too young to be a rowdy.
This one
I saw, well,
I only saw one or two games at the most.
I saw one game in the pre-Cuban era at Reunion Arena. Yeah. And in the Cuban era, I saw, you know, 2001 playoffs and a couple of smattering of games here and there, but, you know, not many.
This one was kind of a subtle jab that I didn't really get until halfway through his spiel, but I thought it was pretty interesting.
We want to welcome y'all to Dallas, first of all. And behalf of all the fans, I'm sure everybody has this in the back of their mind. We want to make sure that y'all are comfortable in Dallas and don't get homesick, because in the past, we did have a player that came here and got homesick and left us hanging a little bit. But we just want to make sure y'all feel at home.
And Chris Kamen didn't know who he was talking about at first. And really? Elton Brand was like, Lamar Odom. And Kamen was like, oh, okay. So that was kind of a...
I appreciated that one. I really did appreciate that one. That was one that I would say was worthy of the setting.
And then this guy...
Because you know some of those guys know that Lamar was being a bitch. You know, they know some...
Elton Brand even talked about it one time on ESPN Dallas.
He did. Yeah, that's right. It's a good point.
Yeah. This guy...
I don't think Elton has any love lost. I mean, Elton, like I was saying in the previous episode, I feel like Elton is kind of a little bit of a march to his own drummer kind of guy anyway, based on what he says. So he's like, I'm not worried about pissing this guy off. He pulled a really crappy thing. So
pulled a sucky card. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah,
this fan didn't really know what was going on. But it was interesting. So there's that.
Team, I saw back a couple of months ago the D League up in Las Vegas, and the team was real well. But his feedback is tough. But my question is, the two guys that you picked up in the draft, they looked so good
there was
in the
three.
D-League up there. Well, the offseason, whatever it was up in
yeah,
the
summer league you're talking
summer
about.
Summer league, right. Yeah. They look so well. So with the added with these guys here, I really feel like being a season ticket holder, I'm proud of what you guys did this year. Because a few months ago, I was shaking my head. And I was trying to figure out who was going to get some tickets to the game this year, because we weren't going to have nobody playing. But you guys did a great job, and I really like the guys you got on the bench and the guys you went and picked up in the college league. Thumbs up.
This was pathetic.
Can you please send that to
yes,
me? There's
I will
so
send
many
that.
Gold.
Yeah.
Feedback is tough.
Her.
Right, Hura. I mean, that guy, I remember the whole time that guy's talking, I'm thinking, we're going to chop that one up.
Yes.
That was good stuff. In the D-League.
Yeah.
Up there in the D-League from the college league.
There was a fan that really had a hard time talking, and I don't want to embarrass him too much, but I think he was just really nervous.
Yeah, I kind of remember that, and too. It's kind of uncomfortable for everybody.
But it was a good question. So do you want to talk about it or just gloss over it?
No, man, let's talk about
it.
I mean, come on, man, it's October 9th. I mean, it's not like we're getting deep dive into X's and O's here, because very little X's and O's have been drawn at this point.
Maybe it was because he was cold. Who knows? It was kind of chilly in there.
This question's for Coach Carlisle. I actually love what y'all have done with the team, and I love the additions, and I think...
Pause it.
Y'all stay strong.
What this is this is the echo playing tricks on him.
Really?
Yeah, when you hear him say, the additions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if you listen to the ticket enough, they will play an old acceptance speech from some old college chancellor guy or something accepting the invitation to some bowl game. I can't remember. And he gets up and starts talking and says, the invitation, because it's just going, and he's not used to just speaking without listening to himself. Because I think the key when you're in that situation is you just focus on what's coming out of your mouth and not
don't
what you're
listening.
Why are you trying to listen to yourself right. And then readjust? So I think that's what it is. Because the other guy said that the echo
feedback.
Was given. He called it feedback, but he meant the echo. So that's what that was.
Too much bass in my headphones.
Yeah,
that's
says,
what he's thinking.
Yeah, he says, bring it down a little bit. He's motioning it to Quincy Jones in there at the producer's desk saying, bring a little down in my ear a little here. So that's what it was with him. I remember that now.
Defensively, I think we were like number 6 in the league last year, but we struggled offensively. We were like 19. And I was just wondering how y'all are going to be more productive offensively this year.
Well, it's a good question.
It was a good question.
It was a good question, and we will break that down on this show as we go forward because that's a question we're going to be asking ourselves too. So part of the other thing was, I don't even remember the context, but the guy that asked the question that basically implicated Ben and Skin into an opinion that they've never had, and what happened was he was criticizing kind of what I would call a dollar menu opinion. A dollar menu opinion on sports talk radio is like just it's just right there on the dollar menu. Anybody can pay a dollar and have that opinion. It's the obvious opinion. It's the obvious. Even calling it an HSO is
the lowest common denominator.
It's not
HSO.
It's not even an HSO. It's something below that because an HSO can be so H that it's clever. And this is something else entirely. This is like just paint by numbers opinion formation, if you will. And I can't remember what the opinion was, but he said, you know, some of these guys on the radio that say yada yada yada, and then he like sees Ben and Skin down there, and he's like, ooh, here's my chance to call them out. So he goes, you know, like Ben and Skin. So then he asks a question, and so then Carlisle takes any opportunity he can to rag on those two guys, and was like, they said what? Do you have what?
I don't, unfortunately, because I didn't want to get off on that big tangent of everything like that. But
that basically kind of explains why the format of something like that kind of has the ample opportunity to go off the rails. But
and we're the complete opposite of that.
We're
really.
On the rails.
Yeah.
100% rail-driven.
Tim gets it off the rails a little bit.
Occasionally.
But that's when he's extra belligerent.
Tweet me.
Yeah. That's a shame. Anything else? I think that's enough to cover. We got to play the game that I wanted to chime in on. Rylan has no idea what my game is that we're going to play.
I have no idea what's happening right now.
But we're going to take a break, and then we'll play the game.
Back and stuff. Here we are. Mavericks Outside Report.
Episode 62.
On the back half of the first hour, episode 62.
This is going fast.
Well, we had a lot to talk about. That was a long segment. That's like the longest non-Followell segment we've ever had.
I'm sure it is. Okay, so let's jump into this game. This game came to my attention via an interview. I don't know why people would want to talk to me. But I did a phone...
I damn sure don't know why, seeing as I only talk to you like all the time.
I did a phone interview via the phone for a basketball... For basketball.
That's amazing. Tell me more.
It was, they called me and I picked up.
And so there was like words and
yes.
You hear, you can talk and then hear, but at the same time.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. I think I understand.
We connected through Google. Not really though. It was for a basketball podcast and they asked me this question and they were like, have you seen the movie The Good Son? And I was like, I've heard of it, but I didn't see it. That's the Macaulay Culkin, Elijah Wood movie. That was The Joint. Back in the 90s.
Macaulay Culkin, Lord of the Rings.
Yes. And apparently the plot line with The Good Son is at the end, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling it, the mom is holding both boys off the edge of a cliff trying to save them. And she can only save one. So she picked, I'm guessing, Macaulay Culkin because he was more popular at the time. If this is in 2000, Elijah Wood would have been saved. So the game is... They asked me if I could only save one out of Dirk and Steve Nash, who would I save?
Oh, okay.
And I saved Dirk.
Well, come on.
Obviously.
Don't make me ever have to get out the belt.
I know, Mark. That's a clown question,
ain't
bro.
Even a question.
Okay, so the game is we're going to play the Good Son game with
All right,
some,
I like this.
Some of the new maps we have.
We're going to have to make this like a I don't know what the proper radio staple term is. I heard Landry Locker said it to me one time. I can't remember what it was.
Did
now,
he
though.
Hate on it? Too?
He
hated on his
he
own
was
opinion.
Spewing the hatred of it while we were talking about it, but there was a term that was used, and basically, this is a segment we got to revisit.
Okay,
maybe not every week, but we got to revisit. I love this.
Okay.
I love this premise.
So the
good job, executive producer. This one. Gentleman, ladies and gentlemen, is
got,
a great gentleman.
Got one. First one, good son. You got strong arms on this one because you're holding on to Elton Brand and Chris Kamen.
I've been working out with Falwell.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. You're
okay,
swole.
I'm ready.
So you can only save one for the year. Who are you banking on this year out of Elton Brand and Chris Kamen? Who's your horse, big man, this year?
Well, I wouldn't say horse.
Who are you relying on the most?
Honestly,
you love him. You're going to hold on to him for the rest of the year.
He's not the starter. He's not projected to be the starter. I don't necessarily want him to be the starter. I think when the Mavs are, if the Mavs are doing what they expect to be doing with their personnel, he won't be the starter. But I'm going to say Elton Brand because of the
expectation. You just hate Sweaty Petty.
The expectation. No, I love the guy. Come on. He like shoots guns and stuff. I would say that because of the expectation of what Elton Brand can do for your defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this roster, and they've added scoring. They've added guys who can make it easier for the team to put points on the board, which was desperately needed last year. But defensively, you know, beyond Sean Marion, Elton Brand is the next guy on the roster whose name you see and resume you look at and understand how he's built and what he can do in a certain position on the floor and say, I can ask a lot of him defensively. And I think, obviously, when you want to play winning basketball, defense is at or near the top of the list all the time. So even though no love lost at all for Kamen, that's a very tough decision. But if I absolutely had to keep one and not the other, I think it would have to be Brand for that reason.
I'm probably going to keep him too, but I've actually been surprised. Again, I need to watch the FC game tonight or probably tomorrow to see what happened with Kamen because his stat line looked pretty good for this game, but he was impressive to me. I had not watched a whole lot of Chris Kamen leading up to this season, but I knew the book on him.
Yeah, we know. I mean, he's been around long enough. We kind of know what to look for, and it's just your question is kind of more around his health,
right,
and his fit with the specific team or situation.
I believe in the last 5 years, he's missed on average 30 games, which is a lot. But in terms of offense, I was more than impressed with his game. He's got a nice turnaround jumper. Mm-hmm. He's very fluid, very confident in it. Something I think we're going to hear Falwell say is he's not afraid to shoot. And that's good.
When you're talking about 6 feet and in, that's something that the Mavericks have needed out of centers in the past and had a hard time getting. You've always had the damp double clutch or the Jan Mahimi can't get a put back or whatever. And that was, even though it was done a little differently, a lot of off the offensive board and a lot of above the rim stuff, but that's why Tyson Chandler was as effective as he was offensively and why it was such a contrast to what people were used to seeing was because that was a guy that if he got the ball and he was right there, he wasn't afraid to go back up with it. The ball's staying above his shoulders. He can go up and get a shot off. And, you know, Kamen's not the same type of player in terms of physical execution and style, but you're right. He's comfortable down there with the ball, and that means he's not afraid to shoot, and he's going to get the ball, and I feel like he uses his body well,
mm-hmm,
as far as positioning to get a good shot, whether it's on a putback or more traditionally, when you're talking about really close, you know, close to the basket, which closer's better, bro.
It is.
Closer's better.
I'm trying to figure out how I can make an analogy for that, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. But there's nothing wrong with him. Again, it's a very tough decision. But like you said, defensively, that's going to matter the most with Elton Brand. And he does bring you some respect in terms of offense as well. So as long as both are healthy and everything's all good, we're gonna stick with Elton Brand. But that's not necessarily a slight against Chris Kamen. Okay, next good son.
I think that just goes to show how well the Mavericks did in the acquisition
yes.
of both of those guys and that they're both critical pieces to,
sure.
like we said from the get-go, you know, your ceiling right now, your reasonable ceiling is go make some noise in the playoffs, and those are a couple guys that if everything's right, health's right, and, you know, chemistry on the floor is right, then they're going to be huge cogs in the noisemaker.
The only thing we can compare of is maybe the first half of the championship season where Haywood and Chandler were both playing relatively well. They were getting you 18 and 10 combined.
Yeah, before Haywood got his little doghouse thing where Rick sat him against San Antonio, and then kind of after that, it kind of Haywood kind of went back to being Haywood.
Right. I'm not saying 18 and 10. It's more like 18 and 16.
They were averaging. Yeah, they were averaging. Yeah, big numbers on the boards and scoring wise, and that's huge from the center position.
So we only have that small frame of reference to work on. So hopefully it comes more full circle with this year. So the next good son, and probably the last, maybe we'll do a quick one, is not as heavy. You're not as swole this day because you had to hold on to both Brandon and Kamen for a while. Darren Collison and OJ Mayo. You can only keep one. Who are you keeping?
There's a good argument to be had for both. Personally, for me, I'm keeping Collison. I'm keeping Collison because I think point guard play is critical.
Especially in today's game.
Pushing the ball and decision making is critical. Now, that being said, there are going to be, despite the bad year that Jason Kidd had last year, and it can be characterized as nothing better than a bad year. Despite that, there's going to be things that Collison's not going to do as well as Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of some decision making and some technique level things where you're talking about getting guys the ball in just the right spot versus 2 feet off the right spot, you know, or whatever. So that's not for me to say that I think he is going to be just end all be all, head and shoulders above the rest, point guard production and point guard play on the court. But I think that having somebody in that role who does that is very important to the team. Whereas OJ Mayo is a scoring, slightly undersized two guard.
Right.
And that's fine. That's needed. We talked about it earlier. Somebody's got to be the second scorer. He seems to be the perfect fit for that. If everything works out. But those guys, I don't want to say that they're easily found because they're not, because we've talked about how we haven't had a two guard since Mike Finley, but point guards, man, point guards head of the snake, man. I have to err over to that side, dictate the pace. This team needs to have its pace dictated. They need to push the ball. They need to, they need to have a point guard who doesn't necessarily, penetrate and get to the rim, but someone who can probe and find spaces and find lanes. And I think Collison can do that adequately enough with the other weapons that are going to be on the floor, even if Mayo wasn't there. There's still some other weapons. So I would have to pick Collison, although I do believe Mayo is the more talented NBA basketball player.
Out of what I've seen, and I this is a tough one for me. I went straight defense with Brand, and I keep on trying to convince myself one way or the other with Collison and Mayo, and it is.
It's tough.
I know, Bachelor fan, man. It probably depends on the day, but probably 60% of me is going to lean with, wow.
The days are changing, man. The days are getting shorter. I got to turn the light on.
I'm going to lean with Mayo. I'm just going to go with it based off of his potential.
I almost could.
And the need.
Because, and that's what I almost said, was that a Mayo playing to his potential could be a X factor beyond X factors for this team. So I see your point, bro.
I gotta
this
go.
This is not an arguing sports segment.
It's not. It just seems like they need what he can provide. And with Collison, out of what I've seen, what I saw in the game against Alba Berlin, he can do what you were talking about, poking and prodding, getting into the paint and finding the guy. But the trade-off is he has a hard time with the entry pass.
I saw that. I'm hoping that that's a temporary thing.
Right.
Because an NBA-level point guard, given familiarity with the sets and his teammates and everything else, that shouldn't really be much of an issue.
Right.
I mean, nobody's perfect, and obviously some are better at it than others, but I tend to think that that will come with time. Do you remember the Boston game last year that Dirk won on the drive to the right block? You remember late in that game, Jason Kidd had fouled out. No, that was a game that Kidd sat. Kidd sat with the back.
Right.
That was one of his four games that he missed with the back. So close, down the stretch, that game's close. You're trying to get the ball to Dirk in wherever Dirk area. And Delonte had a very hard time getting the ball to Dirk with the right timing. He would wait a tick too long, and Dirk would be pushed out another step and a half, and it would throw everything off. That was early in the year. It happened. I remember it happened on like four straight possessions late in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And Delonte kind of threw the ball away even once on an entry pass. And Dirk said, I'm going to win this for you, whatever. You could tell Delonte was struggling with trying to initiate that. but I don't remember him having trouble with that ever again. Now, it's not like he played a load of point guard last year.
Right.
I mean, he was out for a while with the finger. But I think if that had been something that had lingered all year, as far as not being able to make that entry pass
a red flag.
The right way, we would have been talking about it,
right.
And we didn't. So my hope is that Collison, being even more of a seasoned point guard as opposed to swing guard, will be able to you know, learn and get to that point even faster than Delonte was.
It's just, and again, I'm not again. This is kind of a nice portrait of what the Mavs front office did this offseason, is they've got multiple pieces that'll fit, and you can easily make an argument for both of them. It's just that I see, and you talked about it with Mayo, he's kind of an undersized two, but as a point guard, what I saw in some of the instances against Alba Berlin, he can be a nice facilitator once he gets to the rim. He's got nice size and nice mobility. He can find the open guy, and
he's got nice eyes, got the vision.
He's got the good court vision. In terms of defense, I don't think you have to make him try as hard to play defense. I think you kind of had to coax Jason Terry a little bit to play some defense, or he needed an anchor like Tyson Chandler to play defense. But I don't really see that with Mayo. He'll naturally do it, which is something I like to see.
Well, you know, defense comes down to, when a guy has the physical tools and the youth, it all comes down to your mind and your gut. You got to know where to be. You got to think about where to be strategically, anticipating what the offense is going to do. And most importantly, you got to have it in your gut. You got to want to do it. You got to be willing to work and put in the extra effort, because defense, ultimately, the difference between good defense and great defense a lot of times comes down to effort, because, you know, you pursue just one step longer. You keep your arms out just a little bit longer. You know, this, that, and the other thing. Things that I don't do because I'm tired, because I'm out of shape. I know these things. So Mayo ought to be able to do that. It's all a matter of whether or not he can take advantage of this situation. That dude does have something to prove. That's going to be a storyline throughout this entire year, is guys who have something to prove. Mayo is easily at the top of the list, or sharing top billing on that list of guys that have something to prove. No question about it. He has the most to gain financially as well.
Yeah. Before we go to break, quick last one, just one sentence answer. Good son, you got your hands are really tired. You got to hold on to one of the rookies, James, Crowder, or Cunningham. Who are you holding on to?
If we weren't going to break, I would take an incomplete because I got to see more of them. Not Cunningham, because we have a billion combo guards. Beyond that, I don't know. Part of me wants to say you can't teach size, because that's
right.
You know, that's like anything.
Traditionalist anew.
But, you know, I'm hearing good things about Crowder in terms of just motor and versatility. And that's maybe the kind of guy you want to have at the end of the bench of a veteran team. So not Cunningham is my answer.
I'm going to take Crowder. I think he's going to be a guy that could be a rotational guy by the end of the year. He can play 10 minutes on a given night. I think
feedback
that can happen.
Feedback from the chat stream says Crowder as well.
Boom.
Yeah, so there you go. You were right.
Hot sauce.
Verified.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're either going to have Mark Folliwell or we're going to do Nuggets.
Boom.
One or the other,
but right now it's going to be a break. Enjoy fine musical selections from my iTunes library.
Who is that? That's old.
That's a Bo Diddley track that was it was on a Honda commercial or Mazda commercial or something a while back, and it was kind of raw, and you
Bo
know,
knows Mazda.
Was clearly recorded in Bo's garage.
Yeah.
So I picked it up on iTunes because it sounded cool. So that's what I did. Second hour Mavericks Outsider Report is now underway, episode 62.
Mm-hmm.
62. 2 years, man. Over 2 years.
It's
now.
Over two, yeah.
And one of our favorite things we like to do whenever we're at a milestone in the season, or just whenever we're, you know, ready to hear someone else's voice, is call in some of our pals, some of our friends who know a lot about basketball.
I got a question right up here.
Well, like that guy.
Yeah.
And in case you didn't know, which if you don't, you're definitely doing it wrong, that was the voice of the TV play-by-play man for your Dallas Mavericks, Mr. Mark Folliwell, and he joins us now. How are you doing, man?
Good. How are you, fellas?
We are fantastic. We're getting the rust off. We haven't had a show – We were talking about this earlier, since August 2nd. So it's been quite a while since we've actually had a show. And Tim is actually being belligerent elsewhere, so he is not available for tonight's episode.
Oh, I understand. Well, I'm speaking to you tonight from dog walking. That will be done, though, in the next few minutes. So
sweet.
Bear with me while out walking the dog.
You know that we really can do whatever, really, with this show. We can have you walking the dog. We can have you having an enchilada or a pizza or a burger or just watching TV.
All of it, man.
It doesn't matter, no. Really.
That's what the beauty of the Maverick Outsider Report is all about. It's a show of many hats. That's what it is.
Yep. Anything goes. No formats. No rules.
All balls.
Basically. It's like Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just
that's right.
Right.
There
exactly.
You go.
So Mark has watched more preseason basketball for the Mavericks than we have. He is on the inside track because he got to see the FC Barcelona game today, and it's still on my to-do list. And Ryland is still lost in Jessica Alba Berlin.
Yeah, the
game.
I was tuned in expecting to see her. She wasn't there. Change the channel. No, you know, had other things going, but I did see a little bit of the game. But like I said, I need you guys to carry me on this one.
So with two games in the bag, basically, Mark, first, what's been your biggest positive surprise out of the team? And then what's your biggest not so positive concern after two games?
The biggest positive I would say is that I like what I'm seeing offensively out of Kamen. He certainly looks to me like he's going to be someone who is going to be able to help them this year. I mean, the whole notion has been that they would finally have a five-man who would be able to provide genuine offense that you could post up and could hit face-up jumpers, and that would be something that would alleviate pressure on Dirk. And so I would say that through two preseason games, I like what I've seen in that regard out of him. He had 14 points the other day. He went 7 out of 9 from the floor. Today he had 15 points, 5 out of 10 from the floor, went 5 of 8 at the free throw line. So those two performances by Kamen, I think, are an encouraging sign for him being able to deliver on what the Mavericks hope that he can provide. As we all know, the issue never has really been with Kamen about whether or not he has the ability to play. The issue will be whether or not he has the ability to stay healthy, with the numbers being an average of 30 games missed over each of the last five seasons. You know, one year he was pretty much healthy, played 76 games, and then last year 47 out of 66, so he missed 19. That number 19 is maybe a bit misleading, because there was a time last year when New Orleans sat him down because I think they thought they were going to end up trading him to a contender. Late in the year, or shortly before the trade deadline, but that never materialized. But even then, even if you want to take those games out of the equation, and that still means he's missing an average of 28 or 29 games due to injury over the last 5 years. So clearly that's going to be the concern with him. But his performance so far, I think, would have to be the overwhelming positive. And I would say that the concern through two games is it's just painfully apparent to me that they have a long way to go to be ready to play good basketball against a good team in a game that matters. There's a lot of work to be done. And the situation that they're in right now, what they're doing, going overseas for a week, keeping the schedule that they probably have to keep over there. And, I don't think that whole setup is a unique, great experience, but I don't think it's really conducive to helping you hone in on what you need to hone in on to be the best team that you can be. And so the good news is that's about to be in their rearview mirror, and they'll have 4 days of practice to get some things done before they play preseason games under more conventional circumstances starting next Monday. But there's a lot, and let me underline, lot of work to be done, in my humble opinion, before these guys are anywhere close to being ready, like I said, to play a game. Again, understandable because of the situation with new faces, and then this trip overseas. But I just can't stress enough that it looks to me like there is a ton of work to be done to get everybody to have some degree of continuity right now.
And they lost today's game 99-85, and I might be wrong, but does that make it now that NBA teams have now lost two or three games against European teams pretty much all time.
This year?
Yeah, no, I think over the last 5 or 6 years maybe.
No, it's 8-36, I believe, is the record for the European teams against the NBA now since 2003. Anyway, I believe that's what teams EuroLeague teams anyway. I don't know that necessarily encompasses all European outfits, but EuroLeague teams are 8-36 now all time against NBA sides, or at least since 2003. FC Barcelona becomes the first team to win three games against an NBA against NBA competition. CSKA Moscow has won two. Fenerbahce out of Turkey won one, of course, as you guys know, last week. They beat Boston. And there have been a couple of other teams along the way. I think Tel Aviv has won a game in there. And I don't remember who else has, but I know that a couple of other teams have along the way. But Barcelona becomes the first team to win three games against NBA competition, first European team to do that.
And I think one of the tweets I saw today from a bunch of different people was that you can see a team that's only been together for about a week and a half versus a team that's been together for almost a handful, 8 years maybe. So it looked very apparent on the floor today. One of the things...
No doubt. I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that the Mavericks, they lack a lot of continuity right now. And again, let me stress that I'm very inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt because it's... Yeah, you know, it's preseason and Dirk didn't play today and there's a ton of new faces. And again, I don't think that they're in an atmosphere with what's going on that's very conducive to getting a lot of hard work done, which, hey, you knew that going in and this is a unique and wonderful experience. And I'm sure that all of them are glad that they're getting to be a part of it. But clearly, when they get back here tomorrow night and then start practicing on Thursday, it's going to be time to, as soon as you get recovered from the trip and everything, to get down to work. And that's just flat out got to happen.
And one of the things that you mentioned was that they had to do it without Dirk. And we talked about that earlier in the show where we see it as it's something that we don't like hearing now happening, especially with the knee again. And I did the research where it was the right knee in Oklahoma City 2 years ago, which kind of got this ball rolling. It was the right knee last year where he had to be shut down, and it's the right knee again today.
Well, right. And if you'll remember, it was Skin that made the point when we had him on back last year at some point after Dirk was shut down that right knee injury at OKC happened in such a odd non-contact, landing funny but not landing so funny that you think something was sprained or popped, that it just kind of led you to think, is there some kind of, you know, stress injury going on there, or overusage, or, you know, just sort of wear and tear kind of thing. And evidence is kind of starting to point that obviously that's going to be the case. So hopefully it's manageable, and hopefully it's something that gets worked out here in the next few weeks as he rounds into shape and starts to ramp up. I would hate to be hearing about it again in, you know, a month or month and a half or 2 months down the road.
Yeah, I don't put a whole lot into it. I mean, his knee may very well have swelled up after practice, but it may have been so minor, but it gave them the convenient opportunity for them to not play him today. So that may have been, you know, that may have been part of the whole deal as well, because I'm sure that clearly they, you know, the pressure's on when Dirk as a European player is going over there to play. However, look, he played Saturday in Germany. There was obviously an enormous amount of focus and pressure on him playing that game and demands on his time. So given all that has gone on, the circus for Dirk over the course of the last few days, they may wanted to have played him. They may wanted to have rested him and not played him in this game in Barcelona, but it's probably kind of difficult for them to say, well, we just want to give him some time off. So he could have had the most minor of swelling, and that could have been the perfect window to say, okay, well, let's not play Dirk, and we really didn't want to do it anyway, and so we're just not going to do it right now. So until I see further evidence of things happening, this is about as minor as a concern as you could possibly have, when, of course, it's related to the big German.
And then switching gears to another injury, which happened on Saturday, which was Roddy turning his ankle. How concerned are you about that one?
less so now that the things that happened since then have transpired, and that is that he was out of the walking boot as of Monday when they practiced in Barcelona. It looked, you know, he had to go off the floor and couldn't put any weight on it and was in a walking boot when he left the arena on Saturday. But I got to tell you that I was certainly concerned about it. And then did you add to the fact that Roddy's history is that he just has had trouble since his first year in the league. He's had trouble staying healthy. And you look at that, you know, slight frame and you wonder, well, is he just not cut out to stand the rigors of basketball over the course of a long season? So anytime there's an injury with Roddy, there's got to be some concern, but less so now that he's out of the boot and apparently has made some significant improvement.
One of the things that I noticed in the game on Saturday was that the Mavs had a really hard time, and it was mainly on Collison, but other players had it as well, where they had a hard time with entry passes into the post. What do you read into that, or is that just too much of a broad accusation?
They missed a couple of those today. I recall one turnover that Collison had looking for Kamen, and it was a poor pass when Kamen had position and sealed the man down low. You'll see that when you said you hadn't watched the game, right?
Right.
Right, so you'll see that. You'll notice that in the third quarter where there's one particular occasion where that stands out. And I would suspect at this point in terms of what's going on there is there's probably just some working together issues that are going to have to be ironed out. I don't think that there's any doubt to me that there is a meshing together continuity process that's going to unfold over the rest of training camp and preseason games and on into the regular season. So I certainly would agree that I saw that happen the other day and I saw it happen on a couple of occasions today. But again, I'm inclined to think that that's just one of many things on the list that they're going to get better at as time goes by and as there is more of a comfort factor and chemistry factor between all those parties involved.
One of the key guys or one of the bigger acquisitions in terms of needing to see what happens with him based on what he's expected to do for the team this year is what's going to happen with OJ Mayo. And everyone was interested to see how things would work in these first two games, and the results don't look good. Again, I didn't get to see the game.
To say the least.
Yes, I didn't get to see the game yet today, but out of two games, he's shooting 2 for 13. One of the concerns I've heard from other people is that maybe he's just thinking too much or he's trying to figure out what works best for him inside of this new system, and it's just going to take some time for it to work itself out. What do you take away from these two games with Mayo?
I would say that sure, at this point, you would have no reason to believe otherwise. That I certainly think that is a safe and positive way to look at it. I don't have any issue with looking at things that way, and I'm sure that there is that process. You know, look, he knows that there's expectation, and he has built up some of that expectation because he said he wanted to be here. He's looking forward to his opportunity to play with Dirk and be coached with Carlisle, and he's embraced the whole idea out of being a Maverick, and so he wants to, I'm sure, as badly as anyone, do well for obvious reasons because it's a new team. It's a one-year contract situation, potentially. I mean, there is the option for next year, but if he does well, then clearly then he's not going to exercise that option and you know, retest the free agent market. So I'm sure that there's some level of pressure for him right now and a desire to, as fast as he can, figure it out. And with the new system and new teammates and then, once again, going overseas, I'm sure his head's probably spinning right now. So he hasn't looked good in the first two games. However, I'm inclined to like the team in general and the case of this particular individual of Mayo. I'm inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt and figure that this is but one very, very small step at a very, very long road. So there's not a whole lot of point to me in judging much out of his performance other than I just lump him in with the rest of the team that there's a long way to go to be ready to play real games against real teams.
I think that, you know, no matter what flavor of OJ Mayo we end up getting this year, you know, he's not going to shoot 15% on the season. The thing that I think we can start to look at regardless of the stat line is decision making. Have you seen enough in these first two games to where you can rank his decision-making above a 15% success rate, or is it just still too willy-nilly at this point with everybody getting used to each other, you know?
I would rank his decision-making above 15% at this point. He's had a handful of nice passes. He certainly has had some of those. I mean, I don't see anything in him, to be perfectly honest with you, that strikes me as point guard. I do see the ability to handle the ball and make some decisions. But I think that as it relates to Mayo, as it relates to the entire team, I would say right now, and I want to start getting this out there, and I'm going to say the same thing at this point that I said when Rick Carlisle showed up on the scene here in 2008. Because in essence right now, Rick has a new team to try to figure out, you know, what he's going to do. Key components from last year are gone. Key components from the championship team are gone. You're down to Dirk and Marion and a few guys who got thrown into the mix last year, and then a whole lot more guys and bigger, more important roles getting thrown into the mix this year. And I felt like when Rick got here on the scene in 2008 that he needed a 20-game regular season. If you remember, they started 2-7, and panic mode was setting in, and there were a lot of people who felt like that this thing was just headed towards a terrible season. And by 20 games in, they were 12-8. I feel like Rick's going to need, and the team themselves, but because I have such a high level of respect and trust in Carlisle, I think it's fair that he's probably going to need a good 20 games to sort of get a handle on who he's got, what he's got, how it best fits together, what the rotation should look like. You know, if you guys will recall the championship season, that even then, a handful of games into the year, he was still working on the rotation, and after five games, they make the move to Deshaun Stevenson as the starting two. They go to a rotation where Dirk comes out early and then comes back into the game so he can be on the floor with Borea, and that instantly made Borea better when they started going that direction a few games into the season. So I think that Rick's going to need a handful of games, and 20 is a good number because I don't know that you can fairly judge a whole lot out of the team in one or two game increments. Avery always talked about 20 game increments were a fair assessment of, you know, and stretch of time of how a team played that you could make some judgments and make some decisions based on how they were playing over that number of games. So, you know, the good news is that there's six lottery teams from last year on their home schedule to start out the year. I think six of their first eight home games are against lottery teams from last season. So that will help in terms of getting some results. But I think that Mayo and on down the line and Carlisle and everybody that he's looking at, there's going to be a 20-game process where he's got to get a handle on what he's got and how it all fits together. And that carries on down to, you know, those guys getting on the same page with each other as well.
It's going to be a process. We're going to stack good days on top of good days. Yep.
We are, Jason. We are
yep.
Red Ball.
I'll tell you what's funny about that, though. It's I remember that 2-7 start, and I remember that was the first season that my wife and I had season tickets together, and I remember her just being like, oh, my God, they're going to be terrible and all this. And, you know, you got to give it time, and it could be very plausible that they could do that again this year, even with those inferior opponents out of the gate. You never know with the particular opponents that are on the schedule early. It'll be a fun couple weeks in Dallas on the radio and on the blogs and on Twitter if they do get off to a slow start. But you're preaching patience, Mark, and I think it's the right way to go. I think that there's going to be an adjustment period and a feeling out period, and then hopefully this will be the kind of team that can get to know each other, and they'll be playing their best basketball in the back half of the year.
And things may, you know, now that when they get back settled at home and have something akin to more normal training camp, they've got what? When they get back, they'll start practicing on the 11th. So they'll have 19 days from Thursday until their first game. And you can get a lot done in 19 days, and they're going to play six games. But I think that I don't think there's any doubt that they've got a lot of work to do over that time. But like I said, they may get back here and they may be back in their element, and it may be more conducive to getting a whole lot of work done. Plus the games are going to be coming fast, and you can opt to pick, you know, Rick could opt to pick three or four games as games where he's really focusing on trying to get the team ready. But in an effort to not overwork them too much, you know, there might be a couple of games in there along the way where they're throwaway games, where there are more games for younger guys and bench guys to help them get some minutes and get ready. I mean, I don't know what his plans are for how he's going to look to manage the remainder of the preseason, but things may get a whole lot better once they get back here and are not involved in that whole Europe scene, which, as I said at the outset of this interview, I'm sure it's unique and it's once in a lifetime and it's a lot of fun and it's great, and I'm sure that those guys wouldn't trade that experience for anything. But in my opinion, it probably isn't very conducive to putting your best foot forward winning basketball-wise. Fortunately, it's only 1 week, and that week is, for all intents and purposes, over now.
To switch gears a little bit, talking about the trip, how peeved or pissed were you when you started to see tweets about El Clasico?
Well, I wish I had been there. I can certainly say that. That looked like a heck of a good time, and obviously that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And those of us that love soccer certainly have a true appreciation and reverence for that. A lot of those guys, obviously, on the team do too. So I'm glad they all got to go and got to experience that. I wish I could have been there, but that's not how things worked out. And obviously, I hope to get there one day. But it looked like it was great. I mean, they couldn't have seen a better game and a better atmosphere and a performance by the two best players in the world, with Messi and Ronaldo both having two goal performances. If anybody happened to watch the telecast of it, the English language telecast that's on here on BN Sport, the new soccer channel that launched a couple of months ago, then you got to see Ray Hudson be very, very over the top Scottish soccer announcer, who screamed that Messi was as constant as the North Star and twice as radioactive after his free kick for his second goal. So I got to see that. So there is that positive to it.
One of the things I wanted to get your opinion on, which we haven't talked about yet, which we're going to talk about in the next segment, is Deron Williams apparently just wanted to stick another jab to the Mavs fans for what he... Well, I don't know why. I don't even know how to say it. It's just so random.
I don't understand the motivation or the timing. If it had come out 2 months ago, I would have said, okay, fine, whatever. Add it to the end of your blog and let's go on. But I don't understand why all of a sudden now.
What's your take on it, Mark?
My take on it is that, from my own personal standpoint, long since moved on from the thing, but I'm sure that in Deron Williams' mind, maybe the opportunity hasn't presented itself. But I'm sure from afar, Deron Williams didn't like reading stories about what Cuban had to say regarding his opinion that they were maybe better off anyway by how things worked out. So that probably wasn't real easy for him to read, real easy for him to hear. So I'm sure that that was his way of turning the tables on that situation. What went on in his mind, none of us can answer that. None of us know. I do know what the monetary aspect of things are that we talked about all along made it more likely that he would end up staying with the Nets. That's how it played out. And, everything that we were told in terms of from his camp and from the Mavs camp at the beginning of July was that, the meeting wasn't going to be about some big dog and pony show. That's why he actually only met with the Mavs in Brooklyn. He didn't want to do the world tour thing. So my belief on it is that it's probably just it's just his way of responding in a way that obviously is going to, hurt Mark and bring some level of heat on him. It's a way of responding to the comments that Mark had back when he was doing interviews on local radio saying that the Mavs were – potentially better off by how things worked out.
Just so random. It's like, hey, don't forget about me.
Hey, by the way, remember me? You guys really liked me. I don't know. I can go a lot of different ways on that topic. And you said we're going to try and touch on it later. I just, I don't know if it's kind of almost want to just ask Deron, what did you expect Mark to say? Did you expect him to go to every media outlet and say, okay, Mavs fans, let's all get together and cry in our beer now? I mean, Mark, if you know anything about Mark Cuban, you know that he's going to bring forward to his customers the positive spin on why what happened is best for the organization and how they're going to move forward. They did that. And also,
right,
it was said, I believe it was said by Deron initially, that he wanted the meetings to be about basketball.
Right.
So that was according to Mark, that was one of the reasons why he didn't go. Granted, I still think that there could have been positive impacts for Mark going, but given that it came from partially based on something that Williams actually said initially, all just kind of weird. Maybe he's just maybe he got to camp and looked at Gerald Wallace and Joe Johnson and said,
sucks.
These guys aren't as young as I remember.
And they're getting paid a lot.
He saw some gray hair in Gerald Wallace's beard. I mean, I got gray hair in my beard. I'm the same age as Gerald Wallace. We're basketball old, man.
Well, one thing he said that supposedly factored into his thought process was he was concerned about how the Mavs would look without Dirk if something happened. And I would have to say that seeing them today, that was one part of Darren's analysis that was on, because that aspect of things did not look good today with Dirk not being a part of it. But as far as what he had to say, like I said, I would think that his motivation, who knows how much of what he has to say is the truth or isn't, but I certainly know that there's probably pretty strong motivation on his part to one-up what was said about him. And he got the opportunity to do that. And at the end of the day, it's all just a bunch of just talking in the media. And, those two aren't ever going to play against each other. Obviously, the success of the respective teams will, speak a long way towards, who's going to feel the best about how things played out with Williams and Brooklyn and with the Mavericks and Cuban, and how they were able to recover and build a team after Williams didn't want to come here with their plan B. So we'll see.
Before we let you go, I want to go back to the announcers real quick, the soccer announcers. Can you possibly get Skin to become Gary Neville for just a little bit for a game or two this year? Yeah.
Is that what he does?
Neville was fun, man.
He sounds like he's basically having orgasms in mid-game. I'm going to show you during the break, Ryan.
Well, so you got to listen. Do you have BN Sport, Brian? Do you have that?
I don't. That sounds familiar, but I haven't. There's way too many channels.
Do you guys have DirecTV?
I do, yeah.
Yep.
You do? Okay. All right, 620 on DirecTV is BN Sport.
Okay.
So if you have the tier that gets you Fox Soccer Channel, which I presumably, I'm sure that you do. I mean, how else are you going to watch Chelsea?
Right.
I know, right? Then, I called DirecTV and was like, how do I watch Chelsea? I gave it to you.
So if you have the tier that gives you 619 Fox Soccer Channel, then you'll have 620 as well, which is BN Sport. So when they have a game on that has Ray Hudson as a part of it, and Ray Hudson used to be on Gold TV, and he's just known for his incredibly elaborate, colorful ways of saying things, such as Messi. I believe that when the free kick goal was scored that made it 2-1 Barcelona the other day, and it was a fantastically struck free kick by Messi. And that's when he yelled, Magisterial Messi, as constant as the North Star, twice as radioactive. Except probably about an octave higher and maybe 30 decibels louder, at least, than what I just did. So he's certainly one of a kind, that's for sure. And but Gary Neville is one of a kind.
He's off the charts crazy. But if you could get Skin to do something like that for one game, just say, hey, do this. You don't even have to tell him that it's Gary Neville. He'll probably do it anyways.
Tell him it's either that or do the Ed Lover dance, because I've been trying to find a way to get him to do the Ed Lover dance for like 2 years. So it's one of those two.
Okay. Well, the Gary Neville bit is always a fun one. And, Ray Hudson, like I said, he comes up with some real masterpieces as well. I believe there was something like, there was another El Clasico that he was on Gold TV a couple of years ago, where Valdez, the keeper for Barcelona, got into a pretty heated verbal exchange with Cristiano Ronaldo, as a matter of fact. And Valdez, there was a slow motion shot of Valdez right in Cristiano Ronaldo's face, and it was just letting loose with who knows what he was saying. I couldn't read lips in Spanish, but I can promise you it was not very good.
I hope you have
bad chicken
tonight.
And there was something that Ray Hudson, he said something on the lines of, and Valdez spits the verbals like Mussolini on the balcony.
Wow. So
Yeah.
He's getting all up in that.
He's going all history on History Channel on you.
Yeah, he comes up, like I said, with some overly elaborate, colorful ways of saying something. He does a really nice job with that. So I would highly recommend to you guys or anyone, if you get a chance to swing by BN Sport, and he's on the big matches typically. So when you have an El Clasico or something like that, then he's going to be on the big matches working with Phil Shane or someone, one of the higher level guys that are doing play-by-play on there. And it's worth a listen.
I'll definitely.
As a matter of fact, I think there's something. I'm sorry, but I think there's something called Live Ray Hudson on Twitter at Live Ray Hudson.
Wow,
I think is what it is.
That's
that updates everyone. In case you missed it, then you would get a tweet that said that Ray Hudson said, "Magisterial Messi, as constant as an all-star and twice as radioactive."
I think Rylan's gonna go follow him during the break
immediately.
Yes,
immediate follow.
Yeah, like I don't think that it's him. I just think that it's someone who hears what he has to say and knows that it needs to be shared with the Twitterverse. And it does.
It does. You can never have too much gold on Twitter. Well, Mark, we appreciate the time, and I hope the dog walking is a success this evening.
It was a success, and let's hope that things over the course of the next 19 days for the Mavericks are a success as they prepare. And you know, I hope that it doesn't bring people's spirits down. What I had to say about it, it's just I think there's just, if you saw the last two games, I don't know how anybody could reach the conclusion that they don't have a long way to go to get this thing ready. But at the same time, it's new faces. It's two games in, and like I said, it's just not a situation right now. What they're doing, it's fun and all, but it's not very conducive to putting their best foot forward. And that situation, hopefully, will get going whenever they get back here. There's time and games for them to get it going in the right direction, and hopefully that'll happen.
And hopefully it starts with a safe trip back home to Dallas, and then we'll get the ball rolling. And you know that we'll definitely have you on multiple times over the course of the season, because you're our leader, basically. You're just our leader.
Yes. Well, it's always good to talk to my little brothers. I always enjoy that.
All right. Well, we appreciate the time, Mark.
All right. We'll see you guys later.
Thank you, man. There he goes. Mark Folliwell, as always, very grateful for his time joining us, talking about the Mavs and, you know,
soccer.
Whatever else. Dog walking, soccer, football, as it were.
Football.
As they call it elsewhere.
Yes.
So we got one more segment to burn, Brian. What are
nuggets.
We doing?
Nuggets.
What are we doing? We're doing nuggets. So we're going to take a break, and then we come back. NBA nuggets.
Yes.
Y'all know how it goes.
Football.
Across the street, featuring the greatest band in the world, Morris Day and the Time.
I'm fine with just letting that roll for
a little bit. Let's just let it go.
Go another 20 seconds. There's a lot of work going on that song.
Two more in Malibu. Yeah, there is a lot of work going on in that song. Last segment, episode 52, the Mavericks Outsider Report. Touching base before season gets rolling. And one of the things we always do is take a spin through the NBA. Look at what's going on. Look at what's making headlines. What are people talking about? And analyzing it through our Mav-colored glasses, we call it NBA Nuggets. We take little nuggets, Brian, little nuggets of news.
Not chicken McNuggets.
And we analyze them. And
Those sound good, though, right now.
My understanding is that...
This is actually in chronological order, too.
Man, wow.
I'm just going all out today.
Okay.
It's
well,
so bad.
First nugget.
Oh, I heard that, though. I heard that. We have to work on that since Tim is apparently the...
Yeah, if it sounds different, I apologize.
Tim can't even chime in for that. It's too belligerent. First nugget is the NBA unveiling its new flopping policy. I'm sure this is going to be interesting to watch over the course of the year. The official press release said flopping will be defined as any physical act that appears to have been intended to cause the referee to call a foul on another player. Any player who is determined to have committed a flop during the regular season will be subject to the following. First one is just going to be a warning. Second one, $5,000 fine. Third one, $10,000 fine. Fourth one, $15,000 fine. Fifth one, $30,000 fine. If a player violates the flopping rule six times or more, he will be subject to discipline that is reasonable under the circumstances, including an increased fine or suspension. Your thoughts?
Can I just say hallelujah, and I can't wait to see what happens to Ginobili's bank account.
Do you remember that play?
Among many others.
It was a flop on top of a flop where it was Ginobili and James Harden. Where the space-time continuum just busted.
It's like the fabric tore open and a wormhole opened, and we ended up in like a parallel universe where Biff Tannen had built a casino and Marty McFly's mom was married to him.
That's a great trilogy.
Love Back to the Future, dude.
I love it.
Back to the Future's awesome. Hey, I want to blow somebody up on Twitter real quick.
What's that?
Okay. So earlier in the show...
It was earlier in the year as well.
Yeah, it technically was. We were talking about being a bad sports week, and Dirk. Dirk is your basketball snuggie. No matter what goes on with everything else, Dirk being Dirk is always a good thing, and Dirk gonna be Dirk, and he's your basketball snuggie. Brian shared that with Twitter World, and then the tweeter named MIA_Heat_Index takes the tweet and adds to it, hashtag bitchassness never prospers.
I don't think that's grammatically sound.
So, first of all, what? I don't even understand.
I'm digging in.
Are you saying that I'm a bitch ass because Dirk is my basketball snuggie? Is that what you're trying to say?
He's his info says Dwayne Wade, an NBA finalist. He's a fanalist.
He's a fanalist of Dwayne Wade.
And NBA.
Well, then he's an expert on bitch-assness.
Oh, wow.
That's for sure. I just need to, I don't know, I need to digest that one and figure out how we're going to come back over the top with that one.
You need some time. That's okay.
Because here's how I do things, Brian. I bring the hammer.
Yes. You bring the hammer on your shirt.
I bring the hammer. I get a response. And then when a response comes, I bring the sledgehammer. Because what the responder didn't know was that when I brought out the hammer, I already had the sledgehammer planned.
Mm.
That's how you win arguments.
That is.
That's how you drop the mic and walk off.
That's how you debate as well.
I may just reply to this person and say, what in the hell do you mean? Because that's honestly my question right now. Anyway, next nugget.
Okay.
Oh, no. Wait, I want to hear what you think about flopping. Is it going to work? Mechanically, logistically, can this even work?
It works in the premise of what it is, but it still stinks that you're not going to do anything in the moment. You can't be like, oh.
Yeah, and that ultimately means that it would have a more direct impact on what happens on the court. I think with the fines, it's going to be real nebulous. Guys are going to appeal. They're not going to really feel
it. But are they going to announce that? Are they going to announce that? Let it be known?
They have to, otherwise it doesn't do any good.
Right, that's true.
Surely they would, but you never know. It is the NBA.
I mean, the block charge call in the NBA has got to be one of the hardest things in sports to call for a referee.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
but, you know, I think they've made it harder on themselves because of what they've turned into a foul over the last 20 years.
Right.
Also, there's a lot of things that get called charges now that when I was a kid were just called making a move to the basket or, you know, fast break offense. Deal with it. But whatever, man. Next nugget.
Royce White, rookie for the Houston Rockets, has been in
my
the news.
My dad told me about this, of all people.
Really?
Yeah, he just blew me up on it, and I didn't even know. I was like, how do you know this? And
hold on a second, Rylan. We got to talk about Royce White for a second.
Yeah, he didn't know his name, but he said that rookie.
That rookie for Houston.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Yeah.
So
with him, it would have been, what in the hell?
So he's officially joined the team after not being with them for the first portion of training camp because, if you don't know, he has a major anxiety problem where he has a fear of flying, obsessive compulsive disorder over the long haul, basically.
You never know how booty holes is going to act.
You don't. You really don't. You don't know. But
that's tough when you're in the NBA. because
you're expected to fly.
There's no getting around it.
Yeah.
You know, John Madden worked around it in the NFL calling games because he could get on the Madden Cruiser. He's calling a game a week. There are 6 days in between. You can travel. You can do what you got to do. NBA schedule is rigorous, man. You're there late the night before. You're sleeping in. You're getting up. You're getting shoot around in. You're getting a meal in. You're going to the arena. You're playing a game. You're getting on a plane, and you're doing it again. So how do you even – did this not come up? Did nobody know?
They knew.
They just thought maybe they could, like, work with him on it.
So the thing
– what was he – was he drafted or signed on
– He was drafted. He was drafted.
Where was he drafted at?
I wish I knew. I want to say 16th.
So guaranteed money.
Guaranteed money.
Now, that's a mistake.
Now, he had all kinds – everyone said that the player has all kinds of talent. He can play inside, outside. He's got great hands, good passer, and everything like that. He was drafted – don't fail me now. Where did he go? 16th overall. Okay, so I was right. 16th overall. And that's with Houston having like three picks in the first round where they had
so
like,
it was like, yeah, it's a throwaway.
It's a throwaway pick.
I wouldn't have done a guaranteed money for that. There's just too many unanswered questions there.
One of the things I've heard as a suggestion, and I don't know if this is actually going to pan out or not, is that you just have him play the divisional games. Get on a bus. Let him go to Dallas.
What is this?
Let him go to Dallas.
Is this Roger Clemens not having to go on road trips?
I don't know. I mean, it's a big deal for him with anxiety where he just cannot handle it.
How is this not a stipulation of employment?
I don't know.
Oh, my Lord. Young children listening to this podcast, lesson, be good at sports. Because anything else, people are going to tell you to walk.
Pretty much. So if this is the case where he only played... let's say 50 games for the year based off of this mindset, how long do you let it go? Like, you just let this example go for the year and just hope for the best?
You got guaranteed money for minimum 2 years. So, yeah. I mean, it goes for 2 years. Yeah. And hopefully by then you've figured out kind of a way to get him over it. But
I don't think
how old is he, 2021?
Again, I wish I didn't close Wikipedia so fast. I mean, I'm...
It's tough.
He was born April 10th, 1991.
Okay, so he's 21.
Yeah.
If you're not over that by 21, what are the chances you're going to get over it? I mean, it's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible. Anybody can... these type of things, anybody can overcome it. It's just the likelihood, the older you are, obviously it goes down.
Again, I think it's an issue where...
Crazy, man. What a weird story.
Where the talent... gives you the balance to where you'll ride through this because he's such a talented player.
I mean, if he can get over it. If he can't, then he won't, because it'll just be basketball. There's too much continuity required on a basketball court to have a guy in and out of the lineup all the time because he's got a special arrangement because he won't fly anywhere.
And you're flying, for example, you could be flying from Houston to New York to Washington to Toronto
in a span of
4 days.
Yeah, you're on a plane every day or every other day at best, so... Whatever, man. Next nugget.
That
was a good one. What's up, Tim? What's up?
That was a good one. We mentioned this earlier. George Karl talking about how he wants the idea of shortening the season.
Moving it out of the line of sight.
His actual quote was, "I'm sure Commissioner Stern won't like this, but I think the product would be better if we shorten the season. When we start playing in late October, the people are thinking football. If you could just get us less fatigue in a shorter season, I think you'd have a better product. When they started on Christmas Day, I thought, this is not a bad idea. This should be the start of NBA basketball. Maybe December 1st and play 62 games, whatever number they'd come to."
I think December 1st is – even I would be open to December 1st. I don't know about January 1st, though.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
It needs to start. But again, like I said, I'm categorically against anything that changes the number of games in a season because it screws up stats. And
is that the only reason?
Yeah.
Stats?
Yeah.
And we're the outliers, basically, where we don't care. If you start it October 28th, we're going to love it just as much of it.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about it. I've been dealing with it, competing with the NFL my whole life, and it hasn't stopped me from watching either league. My NFL fandom comes and goes based on just whatever mood I'm in. Some years I really follow the shit out of it. Some years I barely follow it at all, except for Dallas or Dallas forces me to not even want to follow them. So
are they forcing you to not follow right now?
Well, man, are they teetering. They are so teetering. The Rangers did them a huge favor. Let's just put it that way.
This spotlight was like, hey.
They are teetering.
Garrett, get out of the way a little bit.
I just can't take multiple eras. I can take some mismanagement and then corrections. Multiple eras of mismanagement consecutively, one after another after another after another. Yeah, this is another topic for another show.
And you started
not to be started at 7:52 p.m.
You started the tweet with the battered wife syndrome, though.
That is, yeah, it people. Is. But see, I'm a Cowboys fan. I follow the Cowboys. I'm on top of it. They're one of my teams. But I don't have this. Oh my God! I got to turn on the radio and hear Cowboys every minute of every day on Monday after the game, and you know, just keep going back to the trough and keep thinking that they're going to be, you know, something that there's no evidence that indicates they can achieve. That's where the fandom is like battered wife syndrome. And you only see it around here in Cowboys because the other teams are too recent in their success. People are a little more just grateful for the success and kind of ride or die with the team either way. But the Cowboys have this different fandom. It's just a different ballgame. So battered wife syndrome, man, for like blind Cowboys fans, like blind faith Cowboys fans. Tim has it sometimes. If he was here, I'd get on him about it.
I mean, that last
he looks at the schedule every year and says 10-6 or 11-5.
It was that last game last year where they were going to New York to play the Giants, and he's like, "I don't care if they're going to win. I don't care."
All right, any more nuggets?
Yes, next nugget. Dwight Howard said he no longer wants to be Superman. He's not going to be named Superman, and his first initial suggestion was Iron Man. And the irony of that was that he wants to be called Iron Man after just coming off of extensive back surgery, and he might not even be ready for the regular season. But then he went to Twitter and said, hey, help me help you by giving me a new nickname.
Whatever.
Whatever. Do you think it's going to implode in L.A. with Dwight Howard?
No.
They're just going to find a way to fall ass backwards into success again.
Absolutely. At least as long as Kobe and Steve Nash are both there, those two guys, in terms of what happens on the basketball court and the things that go into making it happen on the basketball court, I trust those two guys implicitly, even though, you know, I've never been a fan of Kobe because he's always been on the enemy. And, you know, I still resent Steve Nash for not getting his back and his body and all right here. He waited until he married a trainer and moved away. And, you know, obviously he's not with her anymore, but she got him all veganed out and, you know, Pilates'd out and yoga'd out and all this other stuff. Whereas here, him and Dirk were just playing PlayStation all day eating special brownies. And he wasn't ready to play.
There's nothing wrong with
that. Nothing makes me matter than when you're just not ready to play. I mean, you know, I'm not one to talk, but I'm also not a pro athlete. Okay, so we did flopping, we did George Karl, we did Dwight. Was there one between flopping and George Karl?
Royce White,
okay.
And we have one more, the last one. Phil Jackson said that LeBron James has the potential to match Michael Jordan. Now, leading up to this is actually a second opinion of the same nature, because Charles Barkley said, I do think he can be better than Michael. I thought I would never compare anyone to Michael Jordan, but this guy, LeBron James, he does everything well. Michael did everything well. LeBron James is just bigger, stronger, faster. That's the only difference. But Phil Jackson was saying that he's got all the physical attributes to be Michael Jordan. Your thoughts?
Yeah, but there have been plenty of guys come and go that had the physical attributes of Michael Jordan.
Don't forget Harold Miner.
I was setting you up for that. Yes. That's why we do a show together.
Yes.
What made Michael Jordan was beyond, obviously the physical attributes were the foundation, but what made him Michael Jordan and not, I'll try to come up with a comparison. Of course, you know, everybody thinks Ron Harper, but he blew his knees out. Mitch Richmond, but he wasn't as athletic. I'm trying to think from his era. David Thompson, a lot of people compare him to David Thompson. Mm-hmm. What made him Michael Jordan and not David Thompson or not whoever, any, you know, uber athletic 6'5" to 6'7" shooting guard over the years was in his head, was not physical. It was Michael freaking Jordan. Nobody will be Michael Jordan. Shut it down. Let's go home.
So it's basically now come to a situation where it's a ring talk comparison. Now it's
not going to matter because LeBron's going to, I mean, you know, it's just different. He's not going to be Michael. He's not going to do what Michael did to win those games. He's going to do all kinds of amazing things. He's an amazing basketball player. Don't get me wrong. but he's not going to be Michael Jordan. Shut it down. Let's go home.
Do you think Kobe? Kobe's a better comparison.
Kobe's a better comparison. He's also not, but he's not Michael. Nobody even wants to say Kobe is Michael. People say Kobe's amazing. Kobe's a Hall of Fame player.
Kobe's Kobe.
Kobe's Kobe. Kobe's yeah. Kobe. Michael's Michael. Kobe's not on Michael's level. He's up there though. Obviously, I mean, you know,
he
seven
can,
rings
he,
or whatever. Eight
he can
rings
sniff
or,
it
or five rings, whatever it is. Seven rings. Listen to me. I can't do math today.
It's okay.
But anyway, five rings is a big deal, and he's probably gonna have six after this year.
I wouldn't go that far, but he's close. He's going to be in the ballpark.
I got to tell you this. If it's them in the Heat in the finals,
You're not watching.
I can't watch.
You're not going to watch at all.
I feel dirty.
I would watch.
I have to shower afterwards.
I have to shower afterwards.
What do you think, man?
LeBron, I mean, he's going to be he's going to go down as one of the five best players to ever play the game.
I can see that happening.
I can see that, but I don't see him being in the stratosphere of Michael Jordan. It's going to be Kobe that's going to be the closest, but the argument you can't really compare Kobe and LeBron either because they're playing against each other at different phases of their career.
Right. Yep.
So it would have been interesting if they were playing.
If Kobe was about 5 years younger, it'd be really interesting to watch. Just like if Kobe was, you know, 10 years older, it would have been interesting to watch he and Jordan, but. It's good we got them spread out.
Right.
You know? So whatever, man. Ain't going to be Michael Jordan. Come on, y'all. I say hashtag come on, man.
Come on, y'all. So yeah, that's all the nuggets I got. That's all I got. Uh-oh. What's going on?
Nuggets are over.
Oh, okay. That was the fade out.
Yeah, nuggets are over. So now it means we got to wrap it up, man.
Episode
62 is on the way out the dough.
63 will be whenever we decide, really. You want to say like 3 weeks from now? We got enough preseason games under the belt. That's pretty much near the start of the season.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably we're just maybe the right there before the season kicks off.
Yeah.
Like whatever that first game of the season is, the 30th?
30th.
So that is what day of the week is that?
Good guess. I'm going to say it's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday, so we'll just do something there early that week, man.
It's a Tuesday.
Oh, it's Tuesday?
Yeah, it's a Tuesday.
So... We'll do something right before, right after.
Yeah.
But we got to get it in because I'm leaving the country on November 4th and be gone that whole week.
My birthday is the 3rd.
So maybe we should wait until like right after.
Okay.
Or something. I don't know. We'll work it out.
We'll work it out.
Listeners, we'll work it out. And why can we get away with doing this? Because we have some of the greatest listeners in the world. We know there's not a ton of you, but we know that you are loyal. We appreciate that. All the guys have been on the stream. Lots of good chatting going on. We got our man Schlitzuus, like Schlitz malt liquor, U.S. He's been throwing some good stuff out there, namely that Clippers and Mavs are 12-1 to win the West, and the T-Wolves are 90-1 to win it all.
Whoa, 12-1.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, anyway... and also, brownies. So thanks for all you guys who jump on the stream. We know that this is primarily a, you know, tape delay kind of endeavor, to use a term from our childhood. So if you can spare the hours to hang with us live, we always appreciate it. It's fun to interact. For those of you that listen on the podcast, thank you.
Tell
your friends, tell your Twitter followers, tell your Facebook friends, because we know that your friends and your Facebook friends are two different kinds of people. We're on to this. We know what's up.
Yeah.
So how to find us,
where
Brian?
Are you? You find us on iTunes with your RSS, maybe.
Kind of.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So what you can do is you can go to iTunes and search Mavericks Outsider Report. If you're an iTunes person, you use iPhone, iTunes, iPad, iPod.
iPhone 5.
Brian got an iPhone 5. Mine's on order. I'm leaving the BlackBerry behind.
Going to run it over?
I'm going to run that son of a gun over.
Nice.
So... Mark Jenkins, my buddy, he did run his over accidentally, and that's how he ended up with an iPhone. Fell off his tailgate while he was driving around. Anyway.
Was he drunk?
No. 100% sober.
Mm.
Never drive drunk, man. It's bad news.
I know.
Google Mavericks Outside Report, and you can find us on Podomatic, PODOmatic.com. There you can look at old episodes. You can listen to archives. You can subscribe via...
Go listen to episode 38. See what happened on episode 38. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, if it goes back that far. It may not even go that far. But you can subscribe via RSS feed there.
That's the RSS.
If you're into that as opposed to the Apple ecosystem. But, you know, Apple is a one-touch thing. It's completely free. It's in iTunes. Like I said, you can search for it. It'll be delivered automatically whenever we do a show, which is nice because you don't have to know... exactly when we're going to do it.
You're going to wake up one day and be like, oh, shit, there's an episode I can listen to.
Amazing. So
that's awesome.
It's always fun to do that. And Follow us on Twitter. My man Ballin with Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. We love to interact. Brian's going to have you covered on everything that's happening. He's with the team here at home at the arena. He's writing stories on MazFastBreak.com.
And starting tomorrow on the two-man game.
On the two-man game blog, which is ESPN affiliated.
Yes.
So that's awesome as well. He's going to be continuing to write feature stories for both of those outlets and, you know, that those feed segments for this podcast and vice versa. We like to do a little cross-promotion.
Yes.
So check us out there. You can follow me, Rylan, R-H-Y-L-A-N, R-O-W-E, on Twitter as well. My mom is now on Twitter, so...
I saw that. You said, my
mom's on Twitter.
And so, that probably got you in trouble.
No, but I was going to say I'll be cussing less. I don't know if I will be or not. I don't know. I don't cuss a whole lot on Twitter anyway, when I'm really heated.
And then we got to get Tim to do some Twitter.
Tim's tweeting, you know, he's crying in his Rangers beer. He's going to be fine by the time the season starts for Mavs. He'll be back in the swing. T.A. Koger, K-O-G-E-R. You can find him as well. Low quantity, high quality tweeter. Brian is there for all your Mavs coverage.
I'm not live tweeting games.
No live tweeting. We don't support that.
What's his name? Landry. Not a fan of that.
It's a misuse of Twitter. I mean, I don't mind a end of quarter update or somebody rattles off a 25-2 run, throw it out there. It's good for people who are, you know, at church and checking to see, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we don't need play by play. We don't need that.
I'm just doing statistical stuff that comes up over the course.
Throw me some interesting things, you know. We want nuggets, man.
Yeah.
We want nuggets of knowledge. That's what nuggets of knowledge.
There you go.
That's what we want. So thanks again for listening. We appreciate it.
Thanks again to Mark Falwell.
Absolutely. Big brother Mark Falwell joined us, and his presence is always vastly appreciated by us and by our listeners. And what else can we say besides Mark's takeaway? Preach patience, because the season is almost here.
It is, and we'll be ready to talk about it. Mavericks Outsider Report, Ted Jones Broadcasting Center, 2012, Mayans.
Mayans.
Hashtag brownies.com.
I don't know where else to name it. Riley.